Let me review something that we spoke about a few weeks ago, and then we're going to bring this up to date. If you don't have the sheets, so you're going to have to listen more carefully. We were speaking about Rebbe Meir and his wife Bruria, right? And the original discussion was as follows. The Gemara says a story that we went over this inside a few weeks ago. The Gemara says a story about Rebbe Meir and Bruria that were living in a particular neighborhood. I believe, by the way, it was in Tveria where they lived. And there were people in the neighborhood that were causing a lot of grief to Rebbe Meir. They were causing him tsar, grief. I don't know if they beat him up physically or they harassed him on the street, but we know what we can do. We can cause people grief on the street when we don't like what they're doing. By the way, very timely, because what was going on there was during the period of the destruction of the Bayis Sheni, the Second Temple, there rose a group of Baryonim. Baryonim were zealots, people, political zealots, not religious zealots, political zealots that were very, very anti-Roman and anti any kind of discussion with the Romans or giving in to the Romans or compromise or anything like that. And they were not, this was not the opinion of the mainstream Chachamim, the mainstream Chazal. During the time of the Beis HaMikdash destruction, so the Nasi of the Jewish people was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And it was so much so that these people, by the way, from Jews, so to speak, they actually tried to assassinate Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. They actually put a dagger into his into where they thought he was, thinking they would kill him. So we're not talking about kid stuff here. This was very, very serious political questions. Everybody was fighting for Yerushalayim. They thought it was the right way. It was the wrong way. I mean, it was to the point of hurting people, and many people got hurt. People got killed. The opinion of the mainstream the mainstream Pharisee opinion, if you will, Chazal's opinion, was always a middle of the road. It was always a bit pacifist, to the Romans. Let's negotiate. And this was the machlokus, and even after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, during the time of the Hadrian decrees, so again this question came up, and there were still kanoim, there were still zealots, and the zealots still felt that there was a lot of. You could come in, won't you?
I see the baby.
So this is the historical. The historical perspective or context of what we're talking about. Rebbe Meir, just important to know this history. Rebbe Meir was a student of Rebbe Akiva. So what you have here, just want to understand the timeline for a minute before we go into the depth of this. The timeline was that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 70 70 AD. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. After the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Jews were not destroyed. The Jews were hurt, but the Jews were not destroyed. The Romans thought that was the end of it. That was the end of it. We took over Yerushalayim, we occupied Yerushalayim, we destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. What else can happen? What else can we do? Well, little did they expect that there would be a whole new movement that would rise really out of the ashes of the Beis HaMikdash, like a phoenix rose. And it was led by Rabbi Akiva. The importance of Rabbi Akiva in this period of history was not just that he was a great rabbi or a great scholar. The importance of Rabbi Akiva is that he led a restoration of the Jewish people after Yerushalayim was destroyed. You have to understand that it was clear from the time that the Jews came into Eretz Yisrael, Yehoshua, it was all the Beis HaMikdash, Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash. There was a break in between for 70 years, but basically, Beis HaMikdash, we were a temple-centered religion, everything based around the Beis HaMikdash. When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, we didn't know what was going to be, and that could have been the end of the Jewish people as we know it, or even not as we know it, the end of the Jewish people, period. And it was Rabbi Akiva who said no, and put a whole new emphasis on the Beis Hamikdash is nice, and we need Yerushalayim, we need the Beis Hamikdash, but that's not what it's all about. What it's all about is the Jews and the Torah. And he made a great Torah movement. It was a Torah movement. And Rabbi Akiva influenced many people in his generation, great people in his generation, to join his movement. He also started an army with Bar Kokhba to fight against the Romans. At that time, when the Romans saw that they didn't finish the operation with the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, so they brought in from Rome a special type of a devil by the name of Hadrian. And Hadrian came and he said, they told Hadrian, your job, unlike the job of Titus and Vespasian before you, your job is not to destroy Yerushalayim or destroy the Beis Hamikdash. Your job is to destroy the Jewish people. And it wasn't so much a physical destruction of killing them. So it wasn't as Hitler called the final solution, but it was pretty close. He said he realized that the spirit of Judaism is coming through their study of Torah. So he made what we know went down in history as the Hadrian Decrees. So that was the chronology of this is the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. Let's say the leader of the generation was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The next generation was the Hadrian generation. The leader of the generation was Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva was able to keep Judaism alive. Rabbi Akiva's students, he had thousands and thousands of students, but it was a difficult time. There were five students of note that brought over the, that were able to hold on to the Torah and develop something like a Mishnah. That went to through Rebbe Meir, our Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Meir's student was Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, who redacted the Mishnah. So the historic context is very important, how this works over here. In other words, if we want to understand the Mishnah was Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi, who was after, literally a year after the death of Hadrian, working backwards. With the death of Hadrian, as all Roman emperors, the Hadrian Decrees ended. That gave Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi a whole new opportunity to negotiate with the Romans again, because he came back again to the Romans. So Rabbi Yehuda Nasi received all of his Mishnah from Rabbi Meir, who received it from Rabbi Akiva, who received it from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, but there was a whole new movement going on here. In the time of Rabbi Meir / Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, is everybody following me, or is this a little bit complicated? In the time of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi / his teacher Rabbi Meir, so during that period of time, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was able to renegotiate with the Romans. His Roman at his time was a fellow by the name of Antoninus. I don't remember what he's called in Roman, but Antoninus, probably Antonio something or another. So some Italian name. So he was Antoninus. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi negotiated with him, and once again rose from the ashes the Kanoim that said you're not allowed to negotiate with the Romans. So the minute that Hadrian died and we were able to somehow get back to ourselves, there was again a group of zealots which were against the work of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. So we had a repetition, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was negotiating with Vespasian. They tried to kill him. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was negotiating with Antoninus and won the negotiations, and he also had everybody against him, thousands and thousands of people against him. So this was the way the Jewish people went. In the time of Rabbi Meir, there was already negotiations with the Romans. It was right at the end of Hadrian, or after the death of Hadrian, so he wasn't such a... They saw an opportunity for the Jewish people to negotiate again with the Romans. And again, the Kanoim tried to always bother Rabbi Meir. So when we're talking about... what's important here is, a whole new movement after the Beis Hamikdash, where we went from being temple-centered to being Torah-centered. That's extremely important in history. It's an extremely important shift. Judaism changed. We don't like to think about that in kind of Orthodox circles, but the fact of the matter is there was a huge change. It wasn't any longer about Karbonos and Kohanim and coming to Yerushalayim. It was now about Rosh Yeshivas and Torah and scholars and who can redact the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, it was an opportunity. It was a renaissance, revival, because we finally had a little breathing space from Hadrian after he died. Immediately, he brought all of the previous generation together who had the Torah of Rabbi Akiva, and he put it into a Mishnah. Hence, we have the Mishnah and the Talmud that we have today. So that's the history of the Talmud Bavli in a nutshell. That's what happened. The politics at the time was rabbis who were trying to make peace with the Romans and thousands of zealots that were anti any kind of discussion or compromise with the Romans. So you could sit and think for a minute, what side would you be on? The Romans had just... The idea was that if we compromise with the Romans, we will eventually assimilate and become Romans. That was one...
But what kind of compromise
did they make? Well, I'll tell you one interesting compromise. Revisionism. Revisionism. Because... One of the great fears of the Romans at that time was rebellion. They hated Jewish rebellion because look, they lost with Bar Kokhba and Rabbi Akiva. They lost I don't know how many thousands of legions. It's recorded. Even in Masada, thousands. The walls of Yerushalayim, thousands. Jewish rebellion in the Hashmonaim era, which was for 200 years. Jewish rebellion was not the Romans' friend. They hated Jewish rebellion. And they always were trying to squash this rebellion. That's the whole Hanukkah story. It started with the Greeks, went to the Romans. They hated rebellion. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, when he was dealing with Antoninus, he said, what are we going to do about Jewish rebellion? And Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi said, Jews, we don't rebel. We don't do that. So that's why you'll open up the Mishnah, the entire Mishnah. You won't find a word about Hanukkah. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi revised the Mishnah. He deleted the whole Hanukkah story from the Mishnah because he didn't want the Romans to think that we repel. What about Rabbi Akiva's rebellion? All right, that was like a crazy thing, you know. So it was a sort of a... So that's a big compromise. He turned us, if you will, into people of peace when we weren't such people of peace. Now we were protective of our own culture, and we didn't want any secular influence, and secular influence was Greek-Roman. That's the secular influence that was there. So the compromise was to become friends with them. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi goes on and on and on. This is really not our subject tonight, but it just came while I'm here. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi goes on and on and on throughout the Gemara, talking about how good it is to deal with the Romans. You know, that sometimes, he says, Yaakov and Esav have to be friends. He talks about how there's times when they're enemies and there's times that they're friends. He's very anti-rebellion. He's very pro. He's the one who said that you should always daven for the government. Which government is he davening for? Davening for the Roman government. He's the one who said that we should run to greet Roman emperors and make a bracha on them. This was all Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi in an effort to turn the channel of history into a place where we're at peace. And if we're at peace, we could have a renaissance, and we could have a Mishnah, we could have a Talmud. And it worked. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was worked. The Kanaim were against it. Okay, that's historic background to the era. It's a fascinating time. There's so many different aspects to it, and so many personalities, and so many tributaries that you can go off on to understand. You know, people that aren't scholars, say that during this period of time, let's talk about from 50 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash till 200 years after. So they say that the Jewish people were grouped into four or five. There was the Prushim, the Pharisees. There was the Tzedukim, a lot of Sadducees around. There was the Asins, the Asyonim, as they're called. Three, maybe another group, Kanoim, Baryonim, four or five. In reality, if you look at this in a scholarly way, there was well over 70 different political groups that existed. It wasn't four or five. Four or five are just major categories. There was tons and tons of different ideas of what you're supposed to do.
Nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed. including the Jewish personality. That also hasn't changed.
Was there assimilation as a result of this?
Tons of assimilation. Tons of assimilation.
As a result of Rabbi Levinsky's
meeting? I think so, because when you have, it was the same assimilation that happened in Persia when we were eating with the Persians, and the same thing that happened during that whole 70-year period during the destruction of between the Bais Rishon and the Bais Sheni. This is always what's the compromise? This is always the balance. And you know what I would say? It's not so simple. What's the right way? You know, there's survival, and there's, you know, so when I was growing up, so this was the two, this was the big question. Do you separate yourselves? Is it like Hitbadlut? You know, you separate yourself, you ghettoize yourself, you guard yourself from any type of secular influence, because after all, this is the story of history. This is how we get lost. Or do you say, listen, we need to have peace? Now, I grew up in the United States. There was a lot of peace, relatively, compared to World War II. There was a lot of peace with the Goyim, but it was a very expensive peace. I think I'm the only one in my class that's married to a Jew. Not from elementary school. I suppose in yeshiva they marry Jews, but from day school, Hebrew day school.
Hebrew day school?
Hebrew day school. I think so. I made that cheshbon. Oh, first of all, there was only nine of us. but I think I'm the only one in my class in Buffalo. Yeah. So, you know, nobody was putting us in gas chambers. And you know, it's a difficult call. My vote is we have to listen to leaders. You know, there has to be some leadership to direct us and figure out exactly when yes and when not, and how. And it's very complicated, but it's not so simple to just say let's go this way, and it's certainly not so simple to say let's go that way. It's a lot of even what we're seeing today.
I think that Rabbi Yonassi wasn't the only leader, though, was he?
They called him Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Not all. Everybody in the Gemara listened to him. Not everybody listened to him. He had a lot of opposition. But he was so influential. First of all, he was fabulously wealthy, which helps. He was fabulously knowledgeable and tremendously charismatic. So he was. Thousands of poor people would come to him. He would have lines, and he would support thousands of families. He was an aristocrat, so he had this ability to, and he was called Rabbeinu HaKadosh. We gave him the name of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, because he was able to stay frum in that situation. This has happened over and over again in history. Don Yosef Nasi, if you go into the time of the Spanish Inquisition, the Portugal Spanish Inquisition, there's so many times in history where this has happened, and it's never a clear-cut deal, and there's always groups which say we can't have anything to do with them. Hashem will help. Rabbi Akiva was like that, I think. Although you find Rabbi Akiva did talk to Romans, he went to, you know. But mostly it was stay away from the Romans, kill the Romans. He created an army, he rebelled. So let's do, with that background, if you look at we started talking about the story of Rabbi Hanina. I'm sorry if you don't have it, but it's... Gemara here is pages and pages talking about what took place during the Hadrian Decrees, which was, for the most part, the 10 martyrs. The 10 martyrs were, it wasn't really 10 martyrs because the 10 martyrs were over a period of 150 years. But most of them, and the real bad part about it, was during the time of the Hadrian Decrees, which was only a few years. By the way, in secular history, just as an aside, we know a tremendous amount about Hadrian. Like it's out of all the different characters in history, Alexander the Great, you know, all the Titus, we know so much. We know the details of how he looked. The sculptures of him are meduyak. They're babish meduyak. So much so that they've analyzed he complained in his memoirs about a sore throat. They've analyzed a certain type of cancer that he had because of a swelling under his ear that shows up on the sculpture. That's how Baduyuk it was. That he was. So we know a lot about this period of time. We know exactly what took place. What Hadrian would do is he would pick out the people that were rebelling, the leaders of the people that were rebelling, like Rabbi Akiva, and he would kill them in public, hoping to break the spirit of the Jewish people, break this rebellion. And this is what we read on Tisha B'Av, and we read it on Yom Kippur. I wrote a book about it, The Ten Martyrs. It's a fascinating, but very, very sad piece of history. Others did not go along with this. Let me show you this Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan. Gemara says this is an Avodah Zarah Yud Ches. If you have some of the sheets, you have it. But I'll read it to you. It doesn't make a difference. Kishachala Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma. Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma was, again, we're in the generation now of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma is brought in Pirkei Avos as one of the greatest rabbis of his time. But he was anti-Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma was anti-Rabbi Akiva. I don't know if they're anti-personally, but they were politically anti. He felt that you're not allowed to have, he felt that you should have complete negotiations with the Romans. Let's try to make it work out. This was in the height of the heat. So when Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma, Kishachala, when he became ill, he became old. Halach Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion etzer levakre. Another tzaddik, Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion, who was on the Rabbi Akiva camp, went to visit Bikur Cholim, Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma, Gadol Ador. Amarle, and this is what Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma said to him. He said, Chanina Achi, Chanina my brother, he said to him, Iyata Yadea She'uma Zu Min HaShamayim Him Lichua, don't you realize that this nation, meaning the Romans, Min HaShamayim Him Lichua, they were, Hashem made them in charge. Like, why are you, this was his question, think about it. Why are you fighting God? If God made the Romans the nation of the occupiers of Israel, then they're the melech and respect them. Hechrivos beso, what's my proof, he said to him. This is what he said on his deathbed. Shechrivos beso, look at the Romans. They destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. So this was already, we're talking about after the Beis HaMikdash, right? This was already the time of the Hadrian decrees. Sarfas Heichal, they lit his Heichal on fire. Hargas Chasidim, they killed so many of the most righteous Jews. Ibdas Tovav, so many good people were slaughtered. Vadaini Kayemis, and yet God allows the Romans to survive. It must be that the Romans are Min HaShamayim. That was his statement to accept the Romans. Accept it. Like, we're in Gaulus, the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, and that's the end of it. Adayin Hikayemis. So what did Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma want from his visitor, Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion? Ani shamati alecha, and I heard about you, Shata Yoshev Osek Batorah, that you sit and you study Torah in public. Umakil kilois barabim, and you gather groups in public. The Sefer Torah munach l'chavachekach, and you hold a Sefer Torah on your lap while you're doing it. Why are you in the face of the Romans when you're going, why are you breaking the Roman law to teach Torah when it's min hashamayim that the Romans should be here and we should keep their laws? That was his argument. Omer Lei, so Chanina ben Tradion heard this musr, and he said, It was Musser, because what he was really saying to him is, if you gather together 5,000 people in a stadium and study with them Torah, which is exactly what he did, then you are endangering the lives of 5,000 people. So his answer to him after listening to this is, Amar Lei, Min HaShamayim Yirachamu. Hashem will help us. The Romans say you're not allowed to do it. You're doing it anyways. What's with you? Min HaShamayim Yirachamu. Amar Leisa, Rabbi Yossi said to Rabbi Chanina, Ani omer lecha dvarim shel tam. You know, I'm dying. You know, it's hard for me to talk. I'm telling you dvarim shel tam. I'm telling you something which makes sense. I'm telling you dvarim shel tam. I'm explaining something to you. Va'ata omer li, and your answer to me is min hashamayim yirachmu, that Hashem will have mercy. Why are you giving me a stupid answer to an intelligent question? That's what he says to him. Tamehani, and I guess he was a bit angry, he said, it would be a wonder to me im lo yisrifu oscha v'sefer Torah be'esh, if you and your Torah were not burnt at the stake by fire. That's what you're doing. In other words, I wouldn't be surprised, Tamehani, I wouldn't be surprised if the Romans arrest you and burn you at the stake with your Torah.
Is he causing accusations in Tamar when he speaks like?
I don't know. But you could say he caused it. You could say he predicted it. You could say he warned him of it. There's a lot of ways to say it. But whatever it is, this is what we know. Everything else is interpretation. This was the conversation that's recorded in the Gemara. If you don't understand the full historic context of this conversation, then we're not understanding the story. But thank God here tonight we do understand the full context of this. There was two sides. This wasn't just like Chanina ben Trajid was just, you know, playing around with the Sefer Torah and learning with people. These were two sides. And again, the side of Chanina ben Trajid was he was influenced by the very, very great Rabbi Akiva. We would all be influenced by Rabbi Akiva. We are. Rabbi Akiva said, we have to do this even if we're going to die. We have to learn Torah even if we're going to die. Where do we find in history you have to learn Torah even if you're going to die? Where do we find this? And the answer is, he said, now that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, now that we don't have Yerushalayim, the only way we can survive as a people is with the Torah. We don't necessarily have Eretz Yisrael. What kept us through Poland? What kept us through the Ukraine, through Morocco? Only Torah. So this was Rabbi Akiva's argument. So die for it. Make the point and die for it. And if Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma is looking at a very practical way, look, it's Min HaShemayim, there's Romans, what are you doing to the people? That's another side of it. So he says, okay, Min HaShemayim Yirachmu. And he says, but what do you mean? So this was a great machlokas. This was an unbelievable machlokas between Rabbi Chanina ben Trajan and who did eventually, I think it was just weeks later, was put to death by the Romans, and Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma, who died. The end of the story was, Achenifter Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma, I'm skipping a few lines, Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma passed away. Listen to this. V'holchu kol gedole romi l'kavrei. All of the great Romans went to his funeral. He was, this was a great rabbi. The piece of the Gemara that I skipped is there were Chanina ben Trajan telling him, teach me Torah. Let me learn something from you. Explain to me what I can do to improve. I'm not going to change my political view, but spiritually he held him as a great man. All of the Romans are enemies. These were the Hadrian people. They went to his funeral. They gave him kavod. Rabbi Chanina ben Trajan didn't go to the funeral, but he went to the funeral. How do I know he didn't go? Because it says, "Hochu kol gedolei romi l'kavro v'hispiduhu," and the Romans eulogized him, "Hesped gadol," great eulogies. They spoke about the great rabbi Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma. So that's what was going on. Time of Hadrian decrees. Great rabbi dies. All the Romans go, and they say great eulogies about the great rabbi. What's going on? The answer is because they understood that he wasn't one of the rebellion people. He wasn't one of the people that are going to join the Bar Kokhba army. So they had this so clear, the Romans, that which rabbis yes and which rabbis no. Rabbi Akiva they're killing, and this one they're going to his Levaya, and they're giving him covet. B'chazarasan, on the way back from the funeral, Matzilu Rav Chanina ben Trajan, they pass by Rav Chanina ben Trajan. Rav Chanina ben Trajan was in Yerushalayim, as was Rav Yossi ben Kisma. He was in Yerushalayim. They passed by. Rav Chanina ben Trajan taught in what we call today the Kordo. Kordo was a Roman place. That was where he taught, right in the middle of the old city. As many people as he could fit, they would come and listen to Rav Chanina. These were all students of him, Rabbi Akiva. These were all people that were in-your-face Jews. So the Roman, the big Roman, the big shots, the Romans are walking back from the funeral, which I presume was, not I presume, I know, it was in Hara's Aeson. I know, because I know where he's buried. in Hara's Aeson. So amazing, it's wonderful today that we could even picture these footsteps. Romans are going through the old city from Hara's Aeson. What do they see? They leave the funeral of Rabbi Yosef ben Kisman. They see Rabbi Hanina ben Tragion sitting and teaching Torah to Makihilos Gedolos, hundreds, thousands, we don't know what that means. Barabim, the Sefer Torah Munach Lo B'Cheko, exactly as Rabbi Yosef ben Kisman said, I heard that you do this. So he was doing this during the funeral. During the funeral. He was a fugitive. He couldn't go to the funeral with all the Romans there. Heviyuhu, they immediately arrested him. Krachu b'sefer Torah, they wrapped him up in his Sefer Torah. B'kifu b'chavileis muros, and they put sponges between the Sefer Torah and him. B'tzisu b'henes ha'or, and they lit him on fire in front of the students. Behaviu Svogin Shotsemer, and they brought more wool, wet wool, Sharam Bamayim, they put him in water, Vinichum Alibo to put on his heart. Kadeshal Tetse Nishmosa Maher, so he should not die quickly. So the Romans are on the same day, apparently, on the same day, they're giving so much kavod to Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma, Tzaddik, and they're killing Rabbi Hanina ben Tragion, Tzaddik. And here we are, we're just learning the story. Amr Lobito. Okay, so now we're at the stance of the killing of Rav Hanina ben Tragion in front of everybody. It was Amr Lobito, his daughter is with, standing there. Rashi says that they forced the whole family to also come to this execution. Amr Lobito, so the daughter says, Abba, Ereko Bekach, I can't believe I'm seeing you this way. I can't believe this is what's happening. She said, Ereko Bekach. That's all she said. When Rabbi Kiva died, people said that. Amar La, Rabbi Hanina said to his daughter, Il mole aninis rafti levadi, if I would be just being killed, hayakasha adavarli, this would be difficult for me. Achshav now shani nistrof v'sefer Torah imi, but I'm dying with my Torah. Mishi yivake shel bona shel Torah yivake shel boni. He who protects the shame of the Torah will protect my shame too. I'm in good company with my Torah. Who is his daughter? His daughter. Who is his daughter? Bruria. Bruria was his daughter, the wife of Reb Meir. Very important as the story unfolds. Bruria looked at him and said, I don't understand what's happening. His daughter, his brilliant daughter. And his answer was, I'm dying with the Torah, it's okay. It's okay. Amar lo talmida, the students were also there. And they said, Rebbe, ba'ata roa, what do you see? Rashi says, Tosfos says, Shaya nira beineyev shahaya lo liro shub davar teva. They looked at his face and they said, he's seeing something. O malachim, either he's seeing angels, o davar acher, or something else. Ba'ata roa, what do you see? They saw he's seeing something as he's dying. Amr Lahan, so he said, famously, he said, what do I see? I see Gvilin Nisrafin. I see the Sefer Torah is burning. B'yosiyosef parachos. I see the letters of the Torah going into the air. So they said to him, so af atop sach picha v'tikanes b'cha ha'esh. So open your mouth and let the fire go into you so you'll die faster. In the heat. Amr Lahen, So he said to them, "Mutav shiyat lanu mishinasna. I cannot. I'm not allowed to expedite my death. Not allowed to expedite your death. He who gave me life will take my life when he's ready. Mutav shiyat lanu mishinasna about yachbal hubatz. My person is not allowed to." So this is where euthanasia. This is actually one of the sources for the prohibition of euthanasia. Self-inflicted euthanasia. Amar lo, this is an interesting halachic gemara. I just don't want to go there right now. We don't have enough time. Maybe next time. Amar lo, klistaniro. Klistaniro is a Roman word for the executioner. The executioner is watching this. He's watching this Roman. And he says, quote, according to the gemara, Rebbe. That's everybody's calling him Rebbe. He also called him Rebbe. Rebbe. To see this, to see the strength and the righteousness. Imani marba alecha b'shel heves. If I add wood onto the fire, benotol svogin shel tzemer me'al libecha. And if I take the woolen sponges from your heart, meaning if I create a situation where you won't be in such pain, you'll just die. Atamivieni la'olam haba, will you bring me with you to olam haba? That's quite a request, no? He's killing him. Amar lehein, he says, okay. So apparently, this is the halachic parentheses.
He has the authority, though, to decide who's going to olam haba, even though he's great.
I guess so.
Because he acknowledged it by saying, okay.
Unless he was just saying it.
Yeah.
He said, but that's so simple. He said, Ishtabali, swear to me. He knew the rabbi's not going to swear. This is all while he's on fire. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Ishtabali. Swear to me. Ishtabalo, he swore to him. Miyad hirba lo v'shal heves, so he added on to the flames. Minato spoken shal tzemer me'al libo, he took away the sponges. V'yatzasa nishmasa b'mehera, and he died. Afu chafatz, and then the Roman went and he jumped the nafal atocha, or he jumped into the fire and he killed himself. Yatzus a baskol va'amra. All the students around told the story. A baskol came from the shemayim and called out, heavenly voice, Reb Chanina ben Tradyon, v'klistaniroi muzumanim l'chay olam haba. They both got into olam haba. You know, when I read this, like it seems like the main chiddush of the story is that this Roman got into olam haba on the coattails of Rav Chanina ben Trajan. But the purpose of the heavenly voice, we didn't need a heavenly voice, who cares about whether the Roman went to olam haba or not. The chiddush here was that Rav Chanina ben Trajan went to olam haba, because Rav Chanina ben Trajan caused, in a sense, his own death. Rav Chanina ben Tradyon was endangering everybody around him, albeit a great tzaddik. Does he go to Olam? Rav Yossi ben Kisma says to him, "What are you doing? What are you doing? You might lose your Olam Haba." So the baskel comes out and says, "Not only the Roman gets Olam Haba, you get Olam Haba too." So Rav Chanina ben Tradyon is a great tzaddik. End of the story is, so significant, Bacha Rebbe. So Rebbe Yehuda Nasi was the next generation, Rebbe. Rebbe Yehuda Nasi heard the story. It came to him, the story. And he began to cry when he heard the story. Think about this for a second. Again, you know, it's not just a random cry. Who wouldn't cry? Rebbe Yehuda Nasi held an opposite philosophy. It was the opposite philosophy. He's negotiating with the Romans. He was on the side of Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma.
Could it beg the question of whether the other tzaddik would have Rabbi Yossi without his funeral, if these Rishayim all come to give him honor, then, well, that's also a statement about who a person is because of who gives him the honor.
Right.
Too.
But we know he went in his tree down as a tzaddik also.
Yeah.
And here's Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who's the Makabel, if you will, from both of these great tzaddikim in two different sides. So you know what you do when you're in total conflict. Go this way, go that way, cry. Like, crying is like short circuit. I don't know what to do. Like, if I oily be yitzri, like, what am I? So here I'm the leader of the generation, or Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi say, and on the one hand I'm hearing a story of such a tzaddik, unbelievable. I also want to be a tzaddik like that, and I'm hearing, I'm able to save the Jewish people by negotiating with the Romans. So Rebbe, the greatest man of the generation, the aristocrat, the wealthy man, the brilliant man, he's crying. Bacha Rebbe, the Amar. And he said, what do you make of this? This is what he said. He said, Yesh kona olamo b'sha'achas, v'yesh kona olamo b'kamashanim. Some people can earn their world to come in a minute, and some people it takes years and years and years. So what was he saying? You tell me. What was he saying? What was his point? The Roman got it in a minute. And Rome got in a minute. So here we're. So, what's he crying about? There's a lot of different paths, apparently, into Olam Haba. Yeah, Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma's in Olam Haba, Rabbi Chanina ben Tradi's in Olam Haba, and the lousy Roman executioner is in Olam Haba. Everybody's in Olam Haba. It's so confusing. It's so confusing. And if he entered a minute, so what are we working so hard all our lives for? So that's what the Barsha says. The Barsha says that the reason why Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was crying was because the poor guy who gets into Olam Haba with 1 minute could have gotten so much more Olam Haba if he would have just realized this 20 years earlier, 30 years earlier, however old that he was.
What's the point of that? What's the point of that? He did whatever he wants, and in 1 minute he got it anyway.
Right. That's also crying.
So why cry that he didn't do it 20 years earlier?
Right. I'm not so sure that that's why he was crying. I think he was crying because he was crying.
Yeah.
When you're so frustrated and confused and torn, the only answer, your mind shuts off and you cry. You can't process this. This is unprocessable. It doesn't work. Let me get to the point. Bruria was his daughter. I started off a couple weeks ago, and now by the story of these Kanoim that lived. She was his daughter. She married Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir was surrounded by Baryonim. Baryonim are the guys that throw stones and spit. They're called Baryonim. They were always around, and around for a couple thousand years. And this is Rabbi Meir, who was the teacher. Look where he was. Talk about crying. Rabbi Meir was a student of Rabbi Akiva and the teacher of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Where does that put him? So on him, the Gemara says, we learned a couple of weeks ago, that he's the most brilliant man in the generation, but we don't understand him. Okay. It's not such an easy thing here. He was the bridge from Rabbi Akiva to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi to say that, well, sometimes you have to be this way, sometimes you have to be that way. It was Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir marries Bruria. Bruria, who was standing here at this unbelievable, tragic moment. Bruria and Rabbi Meir, if you recall, have this, the Gemara reports, this domestic conflict, which was probably not once, but was probably an ongoing thing, as to what do we do with the Baryonim? What do we do with these people that live around us? How do we deal with them? And Rabbi Meir, interesting, said, well, you know, let's just daven that they all drop dead. That's what he said. Nispalo will daven. And Bruria says to him, That's not the right way. The right way is to daven that they should all do tshuva. What are they arguing about, these two tzaddikim, Ruria and her husband? How do we daven? How do we daven? Do we daven that they should die or that they should do tshuva? So I explained, in the name of Rav Kook, if you recall, we went through the sheet together, that there was a fundamental argument between Bruria and Rabbi Meir, husband and wife, whether people that are really, really bad, can davening help them be good? If they're bad, in other words, if davening is going to help somebody be good, it's because they're good, except that you're davening that, you know, they should go in a better way, they should do tshuva. But if you're really a Russia, if you're really a bad person, so you're a bad person. Bruria insisted, and this is the key point that I want to bring out tonight, Bruria insisted that these people could be brought around, they could do tshuva. Where did she get this from? How did she, to argue with Rabbi Meir, you know, to argue with her, not just her husband, to argue with the Gadol Hador, the maidstone. So I believe that she got it not just for the executioner, but for the whole story. The whole story. Because look, first of all, the executioner goes to Olam Haba. Okay, that's already, are the guys on the block worse than the Roman who somehow gets to Olam Haba? But I think it's deeper than that. She's the one who saw her father say, "What do you see? I see the Sefer Torah burning, but the letters are going into the Shemayim." What is the Omek over here? What's the depth of his vision? Nobody else saw it, by the way. He's the only
spirituality.
Right. You could destroy the paper. You have the paper and you have the words that are on the paper. The words that are on the paper are the neshama of that paper. It's like a body and a soul. It's the parchment and the ink, the body and the soul. And what Rav Hanina ben Travdian told his daughter and the students was they can destroy the parchment, but they can't get those letters. The letters go right up to Shemayim. They can destroy me, but they can't destroy my neshama. So here I am with my Sefer Torah, wrapped up in my Sefer Torah. I'm okay. Because they can't, it hurts, but they can destroy my body, the parchment, but they can't destroy the words, the neshama, the Torah that's here. That they can't get. The message that Bruria understood is that there is a neshama within every single person that not only that the Romans can't destroy, but we can't even destroy it. We can't destroy our own neshama. Meaning, what she was learned, I believe, from her father, was that even these people, you're davening for the people that are hurting you so much, the people who maybe their father tried to kill Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. You know, you're talking about really bad people. But you're davening they should die, meaning that the death sentence means that you have no redeeming factor at all. That's what it means. There's no way that you can redeem yourself for what you've done. But what about the letters? What about the neshama? If there's a neshama, so then there is a redeeming factor. So once Bruria had the experience of seeing the death of her father, she said that there's no such thing as a person who can't do tshuva. And if there's no such thing as a person who can't do tshuva, you're davening wrong. This was the trauma, but the makeup, the character, and don't forget that Bruria was unbelievably brilliant, equal to the Talmudic rabbis, which were in the top 1% of the entire population. She was like a rabbi, big deal. she was like Rabbi Meir, like Rabbi Akiva, like that's who she was. She was on that level of learning, a Gadol of all generations, and this is what she learned from the story of the execution of her father. everybody can do tshuva. I think that this is going to become important next week. But I think Rabbi Meir learned from her. I think he accepted this. He accepted this, and I want to learn some other Gemaras to show how he accepted this. We already learned that even he would hold the Sheretz up in front of his class and say, "I could show you how this too is pure." Isn't that the same thing? Isn't that the same thing? That's what Beria taught him. I leave it to you to think about for homework. It was the same Beria who felt that I'm infallible. It was the same Beria that felt, test me. I can't be shaken. And she was shaken. So here's like an interesting thing. She understood it, but she understood it correctly. She uncovered a truth that I don't know if anybody before her uncovered. I think this was her truth, that there's a pilot light within every one of us, every single person, certainly every Jew, maybe even Romans, but there's a sort of a pilot light that no matter how much garbage you throw on top of it, it just doesn't go away. The light is still there. If you find it, you can fan it, and you have tshuva. That was something that she uncovered, if not for her, to my knowledge.
It must be non-Jews too, if the Romans got along with it. It must be non-Jews too, if the Roman,
right? Maybe it's a different type of a fire, but just something, yeah. A person has good in them. Hashem created people, right? A person has good in them. Remeir learned from this, but she also said that I can't be shaken, which is maybe taking the same, who might have said, but maybe it's taking the same idea too far, because here we have another concept of the Gemara of Al-Tamin Ba'atzmecha. Al-Tamin Ba'atzmecha Ad Yom Misascha. Don't believe in yourself so much so everybody can fall. So it's true, everybody has a neshama that can't be put out, but also everybody has a parchment that can bring them down. So this was the domestic dispute between Rabbi Meir and his wife, and we have a history here of Rabbi Meir and his wife, and Rabbi Chanina ben Trajan, and then coming from them, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, who's crying over the dilemma of how to go, and working together with Antoninus, and hence redacting the Mishnah and saving the Jewish people. Basically saved the Jewish people. Here we are today. It's all Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. So those... that's our cast of characters, and we'll keep working with them.
Just one thing. It seems that Rabbi Meir holding up the Sheretz is saying what Beria is saying. But the bottom line is the Sheretz is not.
Sheretz is treif.
Right. And her bottom line is
the soul. I think that's very, very insightful.
Say it again?
What, may I? that... Here's the difference. Remeir is holding up the Sheretz, and he's saying to all of his students that I can show you many, many ways why this is tahar. This is, but at the end of the day, you don't need a Sheretz. This, everybody in the generation said, nobody's like Remeir. He's so smart, but we don't understand what he's talking like. It's tahar, but you're not allowed to eat it. Whereas Beria took it to a different way. She said, well, if the inside is tar, so it's tar, so it's kosher. And Beria ate the Sheretz. At the end, Beria ate the Sheretz. Well, she gave in at the end. She was seduced. So I guess it goes to where, and what does Remeir say? In his embarrassment and regret over what he did, that he ran away and he hid. It's hard to know what happened to him at the end, to Rabbi Meir. He ran away. But it was all to prove that what Chazal say, when his teachers, Rabbi Akiva and everyone else said, that Nashim Daiton Kalas. It wasn't just Nashim. In other words, that You can't trust yourself, not just Moshe, everybody, the Kohen Gadol. You can't trust yourself at Yom Yisrael. You never know. There is another side here. There is another side here. And she ate the sherets, as you say. At the end, she ate the sherets. So, okay. This shir is for mature audiences. Important in understanding. So much understanding as to where we are today, I think, because, you know, history repeats itself is like an understatement around here. it's like very real, yeah.
I'm just wondering how Yehuda and Hanasi managed to compromise with the Romans if you weren't allowed to learn the Torah.
No, because Hadrian died. As soon as Hadrian died, the decrees died with him. So that was the Renaissance.